Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We have all been beset by the COVID pandemic and have, I think, been well seized, many of us at least, with trying to figure out how serious a problem has it actually been? Where did it come from? What was done to us in response to it? And what do we need to understand about it to prevent similar, if not worse, things from happening to us in the future? I'm very pleased to welcome back a man whom we've not spoken to in too long. His name is Dr. Michael Yeadon. He was a former vice president for research at Pfizer. He has been, among other things, a research scientist of considerable repute. He has founded his own biotech company and sold it handsomely to Novartis. And he has been a board-level consultant to 30 biotechs. He's a man who knows his way around this space and has been inside the belly of the big pharma beast. So we are always appreciative of his time, his insights, and his expertise. Dr. Yeadon, welcome back to Securing America, sir.
Frank, it's great to see you again. Thank you for speaking with me.
The pleasure is mine. I'm anxious to get your reconstruction of what transpired back at the end of 2019 and exactly when at the end of 2019 is a matter of some dispute, but emanating from China and subsequently afflicting the entire world, including, of course, the United States, which is now tallied up by some counts, a million casualties to this so-called SARS-CoV-2 virus at the core of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yes. So, Frank, the way I look at the situation now is really three distinct phases to what's happened here. The first is there was news of a new health threat arising out of China. No question. We all saw that in spades. It is my opinion that that threat has been greatly exaggerated. So the purpose of that, I think, was to make the populations of the world ready to tolerate the second part, which were the unusual interventions, shall we say, in our lives that still afflicts us today. So we could spend a lot of time, not sure it'd be useful today, debating exactly the nature, the magnitude of the health threat, but it's my view that it was not sufficient to justify the interventions that we've seen subsequently. And so the second part is very important. The intervention around the world of various measures like lockdowns, masks, social distancing, and border closures, and the like. Now, it may interest your viewers to know that in 2019, the WHO scientists reviewed all of these so-called non-pharmaceutical interventions. And there's a report of over 100 pages available on the WHO website, and it shows that none of those measures that I've listed had make the blind bit of difference to the transmission, you know, the movement through a population of this apparent epidemic. So not lockdowns or masking, border closures and so on. And the worst part is that report, a large report, was issued to all the member states. So the health departments of all member states knew what I've just said is true. And yet, nevertheless, the governments of those countries, one after the other, in the spring of 2020, imposed these measures, which I think were obviously going to be injurious. And so my summary is that they are useless and injurious measures that were imposed on us. Now, the effects of that, of course, and I believe this was the intention, that it was not a public health intervention. It didn't save anybody, but it definitely, you know, wounded societies all around the world. And I do think that was the intention of the attack. And I think it is an attack. And then the third component has been, and this pains me greatly because, as you say, I work my life in the industry in biotech. I'm afraid that there has been designed, manufactured, authorized and injected alleged vaccines that I think are superfluous. That is, they were not needed. and they don't work, and they are toxic. Basically, in the event that there was a new respiratory health pathogen spreading around, what we know is that the people who are most vulnerable, the elderly, are so because their immune systems respond poorly to new threats. What that also means is they respond poorly to vaccines. And so if there was always an inappropriate strategy to help people, we should always have been looking, as people like Dr. McCulloch said, was to repurpose drugs from our existing armamentarium. And as it's turned out, quite a few have been discovered, and that's what they should have done. But
we should have done it early preventing those from being used at all in some cases.
Absolutely.
Dr. Eden, we're going to run out of time before we do justice to this topic, but I would like to unpack several of the things you've said. And I don't disagree that this virus was not nearly as deadly as we were led to believe, notably by one of your countrymen, Neil Ferguson,
yes,
in the University of London, I think it was, that put forward these fantastic models that were terrifying, I think, particularly to government officials like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But there was, I believe, and we've written about this at our Center for Security Policy's Team B3, a deliberate effort made by the Chinese Communist Party once this SARS virus was out of the laboratory, one way or the other, to make sure that it was disseminated worldwide in the form of a biological warfare attack. And it turns out, when combined with some of the other things that you've talked about, which I think are very apropos, that it could have a deleterious effect. As we were just saying, you don't give people effective medications early on, this thing did prove fairly deadly. No,
absolutely. I think I do agree that certainly the impression was given to people that there was a very serious new health threat, and then this was made apparently real by misuse of a technique called PCR, polymerase chain reaction. That test amplifies pieces of genetic information, and if you use carefully, then you can learn very useful things from it. But what its inventor, Nobel Prize winning Dr. Carrie Mullis, he said it's not a suitable technique for clinical diagnosis, and that's true. And yet that's been the mainstay of working out what it is that people have got, and if they die, what they died of. And so,
And as you pointed out when you were last with me, if you do these amplifications or replications, whatever you call it, often enough, you'll find COVID everywhere.
You can find almost any. Carrie Mullis's phrase is, if you do it well enough, and he smiled at this point, you can find almost anything in anybody. And so if you find one copy of a virus or a piece of gene, it doesn't mean you're sick. It means you've got a positive result from this test. So I do believe that there have been 1 million people who are, so-called COVID-19 deaths. I think there have been 1 million people who have genuinely died after they had a positive test. So, but it's uncertain how many were what they
actually killed by COVID. Yeah. Doctor, we have to take a brief break. When we come back, I want to drill down on, I think, your second major point, which is how did we get all of these lockdowns and these mask mandates and the separations, and not least the use of vaccines, so-called, that had not been adequately tested. We're going to get into that with a man who knows his way around the subject, Dr. Michael Eden, right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. World Health Organization Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus helped the Chinese Communist Party impose the China model worldwide by blessing its unprecedented and devastatingly counterproductive program of lockdowns, mask mandates, compulsory jabs with inadequately tested and problematic vaccines, and enforcement via vaccine passports. As our new book, The CCP is at War with America, makes clear, China's model also enabled electoral arrangements and political abuses that contributed to Donald Trump's defeat. Could another mishandled pandemic have similar effects in the 2022 elections? We may be about to find out. Dr. Tedros has just declared, reportedly over the objections of a majority of his advisory panel, a new global health emergency involving monkeypox. If we don't get back to pandemic responses that actually work, we may be doomed not only to more CCP-style lockdowns and passports, but more stolen elections. This is Frank Gaffney. Dr. Michael Yeadon is in the house. He is a man who has long experience inside Big Pharma, including as a vice president for research for one of the biggest and arguably one of the most controversial of those big pharmaceutical companies, Pfizer. He has become a free man. He is now on his own. He is now bringing to bear his experience and expertise. We're very appreciative of him walking us through what actually went down with this so-called SARS-CoV-2 virus and the pandemic that ensued. And Doctor, I wanted to pick up on, I think, the second of your points, which is the role of the Chinese Communist Party, for one, the World Health Organization, which, as you say, concluded that the so-called China model of, you know, now quite considerable fame, was not going to produce appreciably good results, at least. And the role of the United States government in embracing, along with others around the world, all over the world, really, the full panoply of misbegotten, if not downright dangerous and certainly insidious steps that the Chinese were promoting in their model.
Sure. Yes. No, I, like lots of people, I could see early on after the threat was announced, we could see measures in China, including a phrase we'd never used before in civilian life, lockdown. I mean, lockdown is clearly it's a word you use from prisons. It's what's used when basically the people are being unruly and the leaders need to put them in their place. So yes, there's no question that China trained the world, assisted by the WHO, to assume that these heavy interventions, so-called lockdowns, masks,
vaccine mandates,
and ultimately the vaccine
passports mandate. To ensure they were enforced. Those mandates.
Absolutely, and I'm afraid all it is China. True. It is true that there was an event 201. Bill Gates, WHO, CCP, and others were present, and they rehearsed, interestingly, an event very like the one that actually occurred. So it's
a COVID pandemic, no less.
It's unbelievable to me that people. You can go and look it up, viewers, please. Look it up. Go and
YouTube.
Look up Event 201 and watch the summary. Now, that event happened, I think, October 2019, way before the alleged incident in the real world started. But if you watch the summary, they'll tell you it seems to be a very severe pandemic and we're going to have to, you know, put heavy-duty measures in. Business and governments will need to work together to bring this under control.
And then mass propaganda to ensure compliance.
And of course, what they did was lockdowns, masking, border closures, stopping you moving around, and basically wait for it. It's untreatable, but we'll have a vaccine for you shortly. And so then the next part...
Use any of those other medications in the meantime that were inexpensive and effective and would make a difference.
Dangerous heart medicines. But I can just point out to people that vaccines... in this case, you know, certainly for respiratory illnesses like this, could never be an appropriate response, because the very reason why our elderly citizens are vulnerable is because their immune systems are old and tired and don't respond well to new threats. Well, they don't respond well to new vaccines either. So the vaccine, even if it had been well developed and safe, and it's neither, would not have been effective, and they're not effective. So why would they want to inject people with these gene-based products? Well, you know, I think it was to get people to accept to exchange liberation from the restrictions in return for a digital ID. I think that was cold, hard purpose of it.
Yeah. And instituting that ID is another piece of the China model, the idea of social credit system enabled by these same ID technologies is part and parcel of removing freedom from places like the United States.
People, I think, should understand that if you allow your life to be, as it were, permissioned by a digital ID, then you've lost all of your freedoms, because they can change the conditions under which permission is granted at any moment.
In an instant, that's right.
You're no longer a free citizen, you are someone regulated by a corporation.
Absolutely. Let me ask you, sir, before we lose you for this conversation at least, from your experience with the development of pharmaceuticals, the importance of testing is hard to overstate, particularly if, as Dr. Peter McCullough has said, your object must be safety first and foremost. And yet what has happened here, in part with the connivance, certainly the acquiescence at the least, if not the actual connivance of domestic agencies like our Federal Food and Drug Administration, for example, the Centers for Disease Control and NIH, and then the World Health Organization as well, to some extent, we've seen people saying, well, these vaccines can now be, and I use the term vaccines in finger quotes here, with even infants, for heaven's sakes, who are not terribly susceptible to the disease and could be profoundly affected by the toxicity that you've talked about, will just skip those tests. And you're telling me, I think, that that's the coming thing, is if you amend an approved vaccine, you don't have to test it going forward. This seems madness, sir.
I've never heard of anything more frightening, Frank, than, as you say, that you just summarized. So firstly, I can prove to people in three sentences that these have not been deployed using normal public health policies. If they were deployed for public health reasons, you would not ever give them to people who've already had the disease because they're immune. You never do it. And yet everyone's being chased around to have a jab, even if they've had it. Yes. Secondly, you would never
compelled.
You never give it to children, because children don't catch this and die. They just don't. And then the third group, pregnant women. We've never, for 60 years since thalidomide, ever given to pregnant women a novel medicinal material, even if it might benefit her. We never do it because we don't know what the danger is to her unborn child. For years, we have to gather data carefully. But what did they do? They jabbed everybody. Now it's into children, and pregnant women were lied to, and they were told it was safe, when I can tell you they had not even conducted the reproductive toxicology.
Dr. Michael Yeadon, a colleague of ours, Dr. Naomi Wolf, has been leading a very aggressive effort, as you know, to go through documents that Pfizer had hoped would be locked down, if you will, for 75 years. They are now in the public domain.
Yep.
And one of the things that just jumps out at you and has, I think, probably given rise to causes of action against Pfizer is the lack of testing, or the testing to the extent that they have done it, being falsely represented and indeed covering up serious problems with these vaccines. Have I got
Definitely.
That about right?
Now, there are papers by a friend of mine, Alexandra Latipova. So she's an American citizen, but she's a very experienced.
We spoke with her last week.
Okay, she's great. So she has gone, we work together, it's her work, but she looked at all of the tests that should have been done. So she looked at the dossiers that have been made available to date, really asking the question, were the studies even done? And if they were they done properly? She didn't look at the results, but didn't need to. Huge numbers of tests, certainly for the Moderna product that she has completed a full review, that simply gaps in the dossier. You could drive a truck through it. So they may have found very little, because they didn't even complete the basic testing. Mm. How the FDA and the European Medicine Agency even decided that this was something they could review, let alone reach a positive decision on, is beyond me.
It's not so much you could drive a truck through it, you could drive an emergency use authorization through it, and they did. And this is a topic to which I hope we might return with you, Dr. Yeadon, because I can only suggest that from the evidence I've seen, this is a classic case of regulatory capture by the industry that is supposed to be regulated, of conflicts of interest, corruption, and malfeasance, among other things. Dr. Yeadon, we have to leave it at that for the moment. You are a font of insight into all of this. We appreciate your courage in coming forward to warn us of it, and hope to have another conversation with you very soon about what do we do, given where we are now, other than not do more of it, that's for sure. God bless you, sir. We will be talking with you again soon. We'll be talking with somebody else on the other side of this very short break, right after this. Stay tuned for more of Securing America and the information you need to protect the country we love, right after this.
In cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and I couldn't be more pleased to tell you that we're joined by one of my favorite people, a woman who describes herself as, not exactly every man, I guess, but every woman. She is another of our cherished foreign-born American patriots who came to considerable celebrity as a mom in the Virginia debates about critical race theory in the public schools of Loudoun County back in 2020, I guess, and in the days that followed. Her name is Xi Van Fleet. She is a survivor of Mao Zedong's Cultural Revolution in China. She immigrated to this country. She's made a life here. She's contributing mightily to her community. And she brings a perspective on the Marxist character of, I think, much of what we're being afflicted by these days in the fundamental transformation, as Barack Obama famously called it, of America. Xi Van Fleet has become a friend as well as a much admired member of our community, and I'm delighted always to have a chance to visit with her, and we've a somewhat extended opportunity to do so today. So I'm delighted you're here to hear her thoughts. Xi Van Fleet, welcome back to Securing America. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for inviting me back.
The pleasure is mine, needless to say. So let's level set a little bit about what we are confronting here at the moment. As a basis of your analysis, your own experiences with the Cultural Revolution in your native China. Remind us what that entailed, what Mao Zedong did to the people of China, and how that is instructive to us in our time here.
Well, I think one of the things people need to understand is that the Cultural Revolution is a revolution against the establishment. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you feel like kind of confusing. It is confusing because it is revolution launched by Mao was to overthrow his own government, mm-hmm. because he feel like the party was not listening to him, and he feel like he's losing power, losing influence. So that's why he wanted to overthrow it by mobilize the mass, the people. Like, you know, it said, seize power from below. So afterwards, of course, you just realize we were all used. We were used by Mao for one purpose, power.
Yeah.
And it's the same happening here.
What form did that use of the masses take in Mao's revolution?
Okay. So, of course, Mao never said, go there and take power from me. No, go there to take power from those capitalist rulers. Those people in charge are taking us to capitalism, which will really make us to suffer one more time, because that's what we were liberated from. And now they're taking us back there.
By his original communist revolution.
Yes,
which
yes.
took place a decade or two before, right?
Yeah. So that's massive indoctrination for decades. And then people just say, no way, we are going to follow Mao. We're not going to, and it's the slogan is, we're not going to take the suffer. We're not going to take the suffering one more time. No. So we're going to overthrow those people in power. And in the process, we're going to overthrow everything in the past that's old. That's called the four olds. Anything that is traditional, anything that is Western and modern, and anything that is Soviet. Because by then, we were enemies. Soviet Union and
Soviet
China
Union.
Were enemies. And they were called revisionism. So Mao, that's the madness. Really, he was declaring war to the world. We're going to overthrow everything.
Yeah, but particularly he was focused on the landed elites, if you would, what was left of them, and people who were not necessarily implicated in any of that, but who were nonetheless deemed to be educated or professionals or in other ways sort of leadership cast, you know, and they all had to go. They all had to be terribly humiliated, as well as in many cases murdered. No,
actually, the all the landed gentries, all the intellectuals, they're all either killed or beaten by the time it's Cultural Revolution. So there is no more class enemy left. So he launched this war against his own party. So the target were no longer those what we call bad black class, those haves, those
they were already
beaten and killed. So this is people need to understand the madness is this is against his own party. And who were the number one victim of the Cultural Revolution? President of China, Liu Shaoqi. He was persecuted to death. He was Mao's successor, supposedly. He was number two person in CCP. So that's China's how bad. That's, so Mao could mobilize the mass because most people were indoctrinated. That's the Red Guards. That they know nothing. The only thing they know is their devotion
to Mao. Yeah. So let's flash forward. What you're seeing around us today is an assault on our institutions, our leadership, our establishment, I guess to use your term, our country, in short, our constitutional republic, using techniques, not class warfare and not warfare against, you know, the party per se, but using some of the same instruments of terror and persecution and indoctrination to accomplish those purposes, no?
Same thing, because in the Cultural Revolution, whoever Mao condemned as class enemy, and that's what the Red Guards and everybody was after. Okay, same thing here. That's a way of divide people. Them and us.
The other.
And then them were the class enemy. That's what they were called. Here is the same divisive tactic. Them and us. Mm-hmm. Who are them? Them are the racist, white supremacists, mm-hmm. white nationalists.
Xenophobes.
What, mm-hmm. Yes. And so it's us against them.
Right.
And for the same purpose, power. Mm-hmm. That's the same goal.
Right.
And they're doing in the process the same thing. They're going to get rid of anything that's traditional, mm-hmm. anything that's foundational to
the
this
old.
Country.
Yeah.
They're old, mm-hmm. the four olds. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I'm glad. And recently I've been hearing podcasters use four olds, struggle mm-hmm. session, all this mouse vocabulary now is very useful for us to describe right. what's happening here because right. it's the same thing.
Yeah. Another term that is being used frequently these days is show trial, which of course
yep.
was part of the struggle session and other, persecution of individuals. I think you've appeared on Steve Bannon's show, and as have I, and admire what he is doing. Is your assessment of what has happened to him literally in court, and what is being more generally served up by this January 6th committee, sort of a classic example of the show trial?
Yeah, it's classic example. Mm-hmm. And I did tweet out that in Soviet Union, they have the show trial in the court. Mm-hmm. In Mao's China, the show trial was on the street.
Yes.
It's the Red Guards getting those people, that capitalist rulers, mm-hmm. on the stage and public trials. Mm-hmm. And now we have our own version. And our version of show trial is in the Congress.
Mm-hmm. Well, Congress and I guess in court, in Steve's case, and perhaps others yet to come, but principally being played out in this this very much, it seems to me, Marxist style of a very one-sided, scripted, indictment of individuals who have really no opportunity to challenge or even be present for the process that is being played out in Congress, as you say. And gee, I think this is, and we're going to have to take a short break here in a moment, so we'll come back to this point. This is in the service, it would seem to me, and I want your thoughts on this, of a fundamental transformation of our country, again, for the purposes of acquiring and maximizing power, by people who really have no interest in this constitutional republic of ours. In fact, seem to be quite set on replacing it with something that looks more like Mao's operation.
Yeah, and that's called proletariat
like ours.
Dictatorship.
Is,
yeah,
the dictatorship.
Remember that, proletariat dictatorship.
Of the masses, yeah, exactly.
Of the masses, yes.
Xi Van Fleet, we're going to have to take a short break, as I said. We're going to come back and we're going to talk more about this othering phenomenon and who is perpetrating it outside of our Congress, and to what end? Is it truly to achieve the destruction of our constitutional republic and all that we hold dear, as a practical matter, our freedoms? That and more with Xi Van Fleet right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. World Health Organization Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus helped the Chinese Communist Party impose the China model worldwide by blessing its unprecedented and devastatingly counterproductive program of lockdowns, mask mandates, compulsory jabs with inadequately tested and problematic vaccines, and enforcement via vaccine passports. As our new book, The CCP is at War with America, makes clear, China's model also enabled electoral arrangements and political abuses that contributed to Donald Trump's defeat. Could another mishandled pandemic have similar effects in the 2022 elections? We may be about to find out. Dr. Tedros has just declared, reportedly over the objections of a majority of his advisory panel, a new global health emergency involving monkeypox. If we don't get back to pandemic responses that actually work, we may be doomed not only to more CCP-style lockdowns and passports, but more stolen elections. This is Frank Gaffney. Welcome back. Xi Van Fleet is an extraordinary, I call him foreign-born American patriot from China, who survived the Cultural Revolution in her native land and is now very, I think, properly concerned that we're experiencing something akin to the Cultural Revolution in our own country. She is a mom in Loudoun County, Virginia, has come to some celebrity as a result of her impassioned criticism of critical race theory indoctrination in the public schools of our county, and has been, I think, extremely thoughtful about what she's seeing going on besides, and we're talking about all of that with her now. Let me ask you a little bit about critical race theory, Xi, and how it plays into this cultural revolution in the United States, not just, of course, in Loudoun County, but across our nation now.
Yeah, to me, to my understanding of race, critical race theory, it's just a way to divide people, according to identity. So, in the what Mao did in China is the identity is ownership of property. So if you own anything, land or whatever, you are classified as a black class. And if you don't have much, the less you have, the better. You are proletarian, and then you are in the red class. So it's red versus black. And then whoever are in the black class, your title or your classification become hereditary. So you pass it down to your children, and your children become the enemy of the state at birth.
Even if they don't have any land or
no land,
exalted position of any kind, they're just by virtue of being in that lineage, they are in the wrong class.
Exactly. And so it's, to me, it's just exactly the same. They are the CRT. So you are born into oppressor class. Mm-hmm. And just simply
race,
just because.
As the case.
Or race, yeah. And then that just makes you oppressor. And then the other color, the other ethnicity, you just born into oppressed class. And so I don't know how it's not the same. It's exactly the same. And why they divide is not to help the one class or the other. It's the purpose is to set them against each other.
Yeah, and exploit that fracture for the purposes of controlling the population and accruing power, as you said.
And
when you look around, and again, your experience, particularly in the public schools and the school board meetings of Loudoun County, I think was very instructive, it seems, because it was an insight that parents elsewhere across the country, I think, also had as a result of the COVID distance learning and their exposure to what the children were actually being given in terms of, you know, classes and homework and so on. But speak to this larger point, if you would. If this is, in fact, just another instrument of domination and control, fracturing and exploiting the fault lines, what corrective can there be other than, you know, restoring traditional curricula and excising all of this, and for that matter, teachers who have been, you know, deeply inculcated with it and are committed to it, which we've now discovered are all over the place in our public schools and of course, higher education as well.
There's no simple solution to me. And so what I see is we have to be willing to start to take this long march back. It took them decades to arrive here, the long march through the institutions, and have to take us not a year, not a few years, it take us a long time to get back, because what we are fighting with is the people who are already indoctrinated, and then they still continue to produce in the higher education the future Marxists, and those people are now our teachers in the public school teaching our children with what they learned from those Marxist professors, and they are running our institutions. So this is really, really a serious problem, and I just don't see how we can solve this problem overnight. But we start with the first step of the long march is by exposing the leftist agenda, and started to teach, start to stop them from teaching CRT in school, and we have to have this. This is Mao's term, rescue project mm-hmm. to save the youth yes. that already been indoctrinated.
Yes. Another Maoism that you've sort of alluded to there is that the march of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, right? And this is the critical first step. Zhi, when we come back, we have to take a short break. I want to ask you a bit about the CRT indoctrination elsewhere in our country, notably that now being promoted by our government in institutions like the United States military and the intelligence community and other agencies of our government, and what the cumulative effects of that are likely to be, well, for policy, most obviously, at the moment, and I want to talk with you a little bit about those policies too, but also for the institutions beyond, you know, academia. Is this in fact part and parcel of that long march through all of our institutions for a similar purpose, a destructive purpose, as Mao used the Cultural Revolution for in China? That and more is on our agenda for our last block of conversation with a marvelous human being and great American patriot, Zhi Van Fleet. We'll talk with her about all of that and considerably more in the block ahead. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're visiting with Xi Van Fleet, a friend and neighbor out in Loudoun County, Virginia, a woman who I believe has not only distinguished herself for connecting some very important dots, but she has, as you've seen now, a capacity for expressing what is going on around us that is, if not absolutely unique, certainly needed at the moment. And I'm so pleased to have a chance to visit with her about what we can learn from what was done in China and what the Chinese Communist Party, I believe, and its friends here in the United States are up to in terms of trying to transform our country, well, dismantle it for that matter. Xi, we were talking a bit about, before the break, the government of the United States embracing this critical race theory business, including in indoctrinating our military personnel. Large numbers of people who have not gotten with that program seem to be in the process of being purged, some because they won't take the vaccines, but also because they are not, you know, aligned with the sort of so-called woke program. Based on your experience, if we fail to stop this kind of practice in institutions like the United States military or the government more generally, can we, in fact, survive what these people have in mind for us?
If we don't resist, the next step, it's already there. We're already there. It's totalitarian. Hmm. And I have to say, this is not just, you know, we do talk a lot about education, but it is everywhere because, as I said, the higher education has been producing future Marxism, Marxists for decades. Right. And it's in every institution of this country. And that's what I always say, the infiltration of communism is complete. Mm. And once you see it, it's in the military, you know, and it's everywhere. Yeah. And I have to say, you know, I quit my job a while ago, and my former employer is also the same. That institution is also being infiltrated by the same ideology. They may not understand it. It is the American Society of Civil Engineers. Mm. And for hundreds of years, that is a noble profession, and that profession help better people's lives. They help with clean water infrastructure, but now they're on board with the UN sustainability goal. Mm-hmm. So now they're on board to be a degrowther. Yeah. So it's just amazing. That's everywhere. And
let me ask you about the UN, because one of the things that we've learned, particularly in the wake of this COVID pandemic, is the influence that the Chinese Communist Party has over the World Health Organization, and in fact, over a number of other agencies of the UN, where they either have Chinese nationals in charge or are very much dominant forces. When you look at the UN, you look at these sustainability goals, you look at their various agendas for, redistribution of wealth oftentimes, and other ways of sort of establishing on a transnational basis new norms and goals and guidelines and the like. Is this all part of, as you see it, the Chinese Communist Party's ambitions for world domination?
I think that like a UN, like a World Health Organization, it's absolutely infiltrated by the CCP. Mm-hmm. And also, this whole thing to me is the globalist agenda. Mm-hmm. The globalist agenda is to control the globe. And then the first one, they want to... the first one they really want to get under control is the United States. Mm-hmm. They can only have control of the world if they can control the right. United States.
Or destroy it, yes. As the case may be.
Or destroy it, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And that brings me to perhaps our last point. When you look at the policies that our government has been pursuing, you know, in the past, they were rather explicitly described as engagement with communist China and trying to facilitate its peaceful rise, as they say. Is this anything other than a formula for ultimately our submission to the Chinese Communist Party? Because as they rise, they're becoming much more transparent, I think it's fair to say, that they seek the destruction of the United States, or at least its submission and their dominant position in the world.
It's open. Mm-hmm. They tell the Chinese people the number one enemy is the American imperialism. Mm-hmm. And also people need to understand communism is globalism, mm-hmm. because communism has to get, the goal is to have the whole world become socialist country, and that's when you achieve communism.
Right.
Is one what do you call it? One government, one mm-hmm. One nation under communism.
Under Chinese communism, more to the point.
Yes, yeah. And globalism is kind of like communism. Mm-hmm. So I think they go hand in hand.
I think you're right.
They are all totalitarianism.
Yeah. I would throw in the Islamists as well, the Sharia supremacists. They have different end states in mind, the global resetters, the Islamists, the Chinese communists, but they have, Xi Van Fleet, a single immediate purpose, which is taking down the impediment to the realization of those aspirations, namely the United States of America. We must understand these threats and the synergies that they're seeking by joint action. And I don't know anybody who is as clear-eyed about it as you are, based on some awfully hard experience. So we so appreciate you and your visits with us. I hope you'll make another one very soon. We have to stay abreast of what's happening and who's behind it and to what end. Thank you, Xi Van Fleet. God bless you. Thanks to the rest of you for joining us for this edition of Securing America. We so appreciate you doing so. We hope you feel better prepared as a result to help us in securing America, and that you will henceforth go forth and multiply.